Wie geht's?
A podcast of conversations with people working in the arts, cultural policy and the creative sector, reflecting on arts and culture in times of crises and war in Europe. My name is Martin Zierold. I'm the director of the Institute for Arts and Media Management at the University of Music and Performing Arts in Hamburg, Germany, which is producing this podcast. Today's edition is a special edition, which, like our last episode in German, does not focus on culture and coronavirus, but tries to put the spotlight on the situation of the arts, artists, and cultural institutions in Ukraine at this moment of war in their country in the heart of Europe. I'm glad and honored that Mykhailo Glubokhy has agreed to talk to me today. He's the development director of Izolyatsia, a cultural platform originally based in Donetsk on the site of a former insulation factory. They were forced out of the factory site as early as 2014 when the territory was seized and has tragically been used as an illegal prison ever since. The cultural platform Izolyatsia has operated out of Kiev until the Russian invasion this February 24th. I want to talk with Mykhailo about the really inspiring work that Izolyatsia has been doing in Donetsk as well as Kiev, and it would have deserved a podcast in its own right, as their work is exemplary for an open, multidisciplinary and really inspiring artistic and cultural space. At the same time, in the light of the current situation, our first and foremost topic, obviously, is the current situation in Ukraine and the question what people in Western Europe can do to help. We provide a number of links to Izolyatsia's work and the show notes, which can be found at our German website www.wiegehts-kultur.de, as well as our English site www.covid-culture.com. I invite everyone to check them out. I'm connected online with Mykhailo Glubokhy. I hope that's more or less like it. A mutual connection from a mutual friend and colleague based in Ukraine, working for Izolyatsia, an organization that was originally based in the east of Ukraine, but had to work from Kiev for quite a while already because of the Russian occupation in the eastern part of Ukraine. And now, obviously, in the middle of the current war and invasion by Russia. I'm really, really thankful, Mykhailo, that you take the time to talk to me and talk for the podcast. And obviously, there's so much going on that I'm going to jump right in. And the first question I always ask, and I even hesitate to ask it, but of course, it's very important to just also hear the voices, is how are you?
Hello. Thank you so much for invitation. You know, at this moment, it's pretty hard to answer this question because I'm personally fine and I'm in safety in the western part of Ukraine. But, you know, my heart with everyone in Ukraine, with all the friends who are staying in besieged cities, living in basements for 2 weeks already, people who lost their friends and dear ones. And from this perspective, of course, our situation is horrible and I feel really devastated by what's going on in my country.
Yeah. Maybe before, we would also like to talk about the work that your organization has been doing before the invasion, because I think that's a really exciting example also of the brilliant work that has been done in the Ukraine in the past decades already. Of course, the pressing issue is the situation right now. And you also mentioned in a way we lack words to imagine what is really going on. But if you just give people in even more safety in the Western European part an idea, what are you hoping for? What would be helpful for your situation? Is there something you would just like want to bring out as a message? Because I know that many people would like to help and it's sometimes quite hard to get an idea if there's anything or what can be done. And I know there's a lot that can be done, but what is the most urgent thing or what would you hope for people to do who want to help?
Oh, there are a lot of things that can be done now. And first of all, again, I want to thank all the citizens of European Union or other countries that are bordering with Ukraine. Of course, I'm not speaking about the countries that actually invaded our country, but others. But you know, we never knew that we had so many friends and people, you know, in Moldova, in Romania, in Slovakia, in Poland, you know, in Germany, everywhere. They're extremely helpful and they are really open to give a hand and to support refugees coming from Ukraine, support artists, cultural workers, provide them with place to stay, with something to do. There are residences which are accepting Ukrainians without any specific demands. You know, it's really great to see how many support is given by average citizens of those countries without any push from their governments, you know, just because of their heart and their desire to help people in need. And it's really available and it's really great to see. So one of the things I want to thank those people and to tell them that unfortunately they shouldn't stop. And there is still, unfortunately, so many people, especially women and children and older people, who need your support and help in this situation. But at the same time, there are still a lot of other things that we should do. Of course, one of them is supporting humanitarian initiatives that are going on here in Ukraine. You can imagine that a lot of cities are just being erased from the surface of the earth, and there is a lot of need for, you know, people, for, again, for older people, people who cannot help themselves, to, you know, to get medicine, to get warm clothes, to get water. You know, it's hard to imagine that, you know, Ukraine is a big, modern, developed country with all the utilities, you know, like electricity, water, heating, gas, it's, you know, internet, it's everything that people usually consider to be normal is there. You know, we had no problems with this. And with this background, you learn that children are dying of dehydration now in Ukraine, you know, because there is no water for them to drink. It's just incredible to think about this when there is water everywhere, but unfortunately they cannot have access to it. So this kind of efforts, people are, you know, helping each other, organizing food, supplies and stuff like this. They need help and they need funding. Unfortunately, you know, it's a simple and really stupid thing when you're asking people to donate money. But unfortunately, this is something really crucial at this moment. There are a lot of organizations that need support and that are doing a great job helping people here in Ukraine. Another thing which is really important is actually fighting informational war, because now we see that Europe is united. You know, we spoke with friends from all around Europe who told that, you know, most of the people are united and they are looking at what's going on in Ukraine. They want to support us. They see what's going on and so on. But, you know, we don't know how long will it last till people will find comfort in looking into, you know, looking to things the way they were before, you know, blaming people here in Ukraine for doing something, finding some right-wing extremists in Ukraine, you know, like maybe we shouldn't support them, maybe we shouldn't spend money to support those people, or, you know, people just lose their interest and they, you know, all this support can disappear. And this is one of the main fears that I have, you know, the big informational war that is going on directly from informational sources of Russian Federation and the fact that people here can be forgotten in a couple of weeks. And of course, you know, because we are a cultural center and we are working a lot with cultural centers all around Europe, we're also members of various networks that host different cultural centers, non-for-profit organizations, and so on. We are trying to organize events in support of Ukraine and to represent some cultural products, if I can say so, that were made here in Ukraine, films, you know, photos, artworks, whatever. These kind of events are really easy to be organized now. And this is something that we also ask people to do.
Thank you very much for the overview. And I think there's, like you said, there's a lot that can be done. And we'll also put a link in the show notes to organizations that provide humanitarian aid, that people who want to start just by donating money can really start there and find a list of organizations. And you also have a list of organizations on the website of Isolacja that you recommend. And I think I'd like to turn to the work of Isolacja before the invasion and the war, or actually you could say just the invasion of the whole country now, because I think a lot of the story of the past decade can be told through the work of your institution. If I get it correct, it was a physical space, an art center based in a former factory, which is something that's quite familiar also. Like I said, for many European arts organizations use former industrial spaces as platforms for artistic work. And that had to stop already with the first invasion of the Donbas region. And you moved out of Donetsk and out of this former factory into Kiev in a kind of diaspora situation, still trying to raise awareness and do artistic and cultural work focusing on the Donbas region, but from Kiev, because your actual center has been occupied for many years by now. But that's just my quick summary. If you want to give us an insight into the work and really maybe tell the story of your country also through your work.
So our cultural center was established in 2010 in Donetsk, in the east of Ukraine. And it was the former insulation materials factory. So the factory was established in 1950s. The idea was to use products of coal mining to produce mineral wool for insulation purposes. And it was quite successful. They would export their products, you know, all around Soviet Union. They would use it for different kind of industries, including submarines and factories, and it's really a lot of applications for this mineral wool. But in 2005, the factory went bankrupt, and it was used basically as a storage for some businesses, but nothing more. And in 2010. We came up with the idea to turn it into a contemporary cultural platform. Idea of platform was that we give spaces on this factory to other people so they can start their own creative projects, so they can start creative economy. Because there was a lot of places, this idea was really, really successful. And for 4 years, we developed this project in Donetsk. And it was really strong, especially, you know, because we had a lot of inspiration coming from our friends from Europe. For example, a German embassy to a German consulate to Donetsk was pushing rural area models to our region. Because, you know, it used to be a big industrial region with a lot of mines, with a lot of factories. But since the Soviet Union collapsed, most of those factories went bankrupt or, you know, were not working to their full capacity. And we saw that we should replace this old economy, which was denying with modern, contemporary, creative, you know, service-oriented economy. Our place was really big, really successful. We had a lot of international stars, people from all around Europe who came for residences and produced site-specific works. And again, it was really important for us that we do not bring ready art, you know, as white cube to show some pictures on the wall. But we actually invited artists to come, to learn the context, to work with local volunteers, to inspire local people, and then build their new artworks based on their experiences and based on the needs of local people. It worked really well because, you know, before our existence, it was pretty hard for people to understand, you know, contemporary art or contemporary culture. There was no education about this. You know, people never knew that how it works and what is it for. But in 2014, you know, we had, you know, for example, during our fairs, we would have 3,500 people visiting our place in one day. People were really interested in what we're doing. They were interested in participating in educational programs. We had a fab lab on our territory. So, you know, digital fabrication laboratory with 3D printers, laser cutters. So a lot of students came to us from technical universities to learn and to work with these machines before it was, of course, impossible for them. On the territory of Izolyatsia, we had a canteen, we had bookshop, which also worked as a library. We had a cinema. We had a number of galleries, like spaces for exhibitions. And we had separate co-working spaces for companies that worked in creative or social businesses, which was also, you know, really nice company to have around. And also, you know, it was really important that the whole area of Izolyatsia had this really nice Wi-Fi coverage, which was, you know, really a new thing back in 2012. And people again came to us to enjoy this, you know, internet access and other things, which was really great. But unfortunately, in 2014, in June of 2014, people with weapons came to our territory with the paper saying that they are bringing humanitarian aid from Russia to be stored on our premises. And they seized control over this territory. They, for the first day, they allowed us to take some of the art pieces from the territory, but most of the artwork stayed because they said that this art is degenerate and that it's not an art and it's something that they had to destroy because it spoils their use. There is an interview of those people who seized our building in Donetsk. They made an interview with Russian opposition media. They were allowed to get on site because they were Russian, obviously. And 3 interviews of people who took control over our site is available on our website. You can listen to it and understand what kind of attitude towards contemporary culture these people had. But since then nobody from our team went there and or was allowed to get on this territory. And we only know about situation there through testimonies of people who were captured and kept there as hostages. Unfortunately, there is a huge number of people and actually relatively, quite well-known people. For example, Stanislav Asiev, he is a Ukrainian journalist who spent 2 years in Izolyatsia in this prison, which is horrible. He wrote a book about this experience. The book is available in German, actually. It was translated in Germany, and I think it's possible even to buy it now in German language. But in general, what we know that this territory is turned into a concentration camp. It's a prison where people are being tortured and executed. There is a lot of testimonies about how exactly this is done. I'm not going to talk about this now, but you can look it up in the books. It's really horrible what people do there. This whole site is considered to be illegal prison because this is a term that means that no humanitarian or observation missions are allowed to go there. So, you know, no Red Cross, no OSCE, no any kind of monitoring is allowed to check how it's organized or what is the status of people who are captured. And even it gets worse because people who are kept in Izolyatsia, they are not officially recognized as prisoners. So, you know, if someone is being taken to Izolyatsia, you won't be given this information. You know, Russian Federation or its puppets, they will not tell you where you people are. And this is one of the big problems for all the human rights organizations who are trying to rescue people or to organize exchanges, for example. It's really hard for them to learn about the situation. So unfortunately, the situation stays like this up until now. So, you know, while we're talking, the prison's still there and it exists and people are still being tortured there. And this is really horrible. And, you know, this is a really perfect example of what's going on here. You know, this process of transformation of cultural site, place of education, knowledge, culture, and dialogue is actually turned into prison. And this is, you know, exactly upside down situation from what's going on in Europe, in civilization, when actually prisons are being closed because there is not enough demand for them. Yeah. But we actually moved to Kiev. We started our work again from scratch. We lost everything, but we knew that we need to carry on our work. So this was in 2014. All the way till the start of pandemic, we were building Creative Hub in Kiev, and doing a lot of projects all around the country and abroad. And when the pandemic started, we understood that we need to start to do something new, to change our perspective a little bit. And we started to invest heavily into decentralization. And it's probably not really well known for people in countries in the West, but Ukraine had a really successful reform of decentralization for the last couple of years. That means that a lot of funds and taxes would stay in local municipalities, and new local municipalities are being formed. So, for example, a city that we started to work with, city of Solidar in the east of Ukraine, it's a new city. It used to be a part of bigger regional center, Bakhmut, but now it became independent and it has new city government, including new cultural department that, you know, knows better what are the needs of local people. So there is a lot of opportunity to work with cultural decentralization, to help local cultural departments, to help local municipalities to develop their own cultural policies. And this was our focus for the last 2 years. We even have a bus that, you know, which is a mobile cultural center that travels to the smaller communities, showing what can be done, bringing experts, bringing exhibitions, educational programs. And it was extremely successful because we managed to build a really nice network of small organizations all around the country who now we are trying to support in different ways. So this was really inspiring for last years because we saw a lot of interest in development of culture, development of urbanism, architecture, you know, and it's what's really important, development of a democracy, because, you know, as soon as people understand that they can influence their own communities, that they have responsibility and they have right to, you know, to say whatever they need and to say how they see the development of their cities, they immediately start to be, you know, active citizens. They start to learn, they start to be really active about what they can done in their communities. And this transformation was, you know, really important and really incredible to see. Unfortunately, 2 weeks ago, we woke up with explosions of missiles not so far away from our home. We live in the northern part of Kiev, which was really close to this airfields and military bases that were attacked for at this first strike by Russian Federation. So we basically had no choice, and we packed up our stuff really quick and got our 5-year-old son to safety here in the west of Ukraine. Though it's really hard to say if it's safe or not, because they're still constantly using missiles to shoot cities all around the country. You know, it's not only cities that are close to the border. Unfortunately, the range of missiles can reach any city in Ukraine. But still, in comparing with other people, we stay in safety. And we are now talking to a lot of other cultural organizations here in Ukraine, and they're doing a lot of work, mostly of humanitarian nature, but also helping artists, creative professionals to leave the country, to find some place to stay. People are buying food, medicine, clothes, equipment, you know, even bulletproof vests. Some people are trying to save cultural heritage and artworks. There is a really nice initiative that actually helps museums to save their collections, to bring them to some safe places, even outside of Ukraine, unfortunately. Of course, all of us are trying to spread a little bit of a word about what's going on here and what is the situation.
Yeah, thank you very much for like this overview of the work you've been doing prior to the Russian invasion, and also a bit more impressions on the current situation. I just want to stress and alert our listeners that there is a website that I think you built or your platform built, telling the story or telling bits of the story of this current situation of Izolyatsia as an illegal prison. And we put the link to the platform called Izolyatsia Must Speak into the show notes, that people can also get a bit of a visual idea of the place and what's happening there right now and has been happening there for the past 8 years almost. So I think it's really important that to be aware of also the story that has already happened in the past years. So it's not just something that we're talking about the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, but we're actually talking about something that has been building up. And I think, again, in Western European countries, I think we did a pretty good job of ignoring lots of the signs that have already been there in the past. And it's important, at least for the future, to acknowledge that and try to get that knowledge now, hoping that can contribute to something in the long term. A question I would like to ask you about the current situation. You've been a platform, a network involved in many, many ways with artists in Ukraine and also in the whole of Europe and globally. Can you give us an idea of what are typical situations your partners in your network find themselves in? How many are still in the country? Where are they in the country? How many have had the chance to leave by now? Because I mean, you said you managed to get to the western part and are comparatively safe at the moment, still in the country. What voices do you hear? What are people trying to do or doing at this moment in your network, from artists, but also like collaborators on all levels?
Well, there are a lot of people who actually went all the way to the west, of course. A lot of people are in Lviv, a lot of people are in Uzhgorod and other cities. And some of them are staying in their cities. Of course, it depends on the situation in the city. For example, Dnipro, which is eastern Ukrainian city, but, you know, up until today, it was safe. Today, there was a shelling, unfortunately, but still, you know, it's in good shape. So people in Dnipro, for example, are staying there and trying to help local volunteers and to help local territorial defense groups. The people, of course, who are in occupation now, they cannot do anything. Yesterday, we learned this horrible news that the director of Melitopol Museum, she was kidnapped from her house by Russian military, and she was kept somewhere, you know, the whole day long. In the evening, she was released, but we still don't know what happened to her and what kind of talks they had and what's going on. And of course it depends, but most of the people, I think they're trying to find a safe place to reorganize their work. So I know that, you know, some people actually went to abroad to other countries, especially to countries close to to Ukraine, to Poland, Slovakia, and to do something useful from there, you know, to breathe out a little bit and to concentrate and to start doing something else. At the same time, a lot of people, they actually switch their activities into volunteer and humanitarian help. And, you know, from what I see, they're really successful there. You know, they managed to build really strong connections with all the people around the country. They know the needs, they know the routes, how to get stuff into Ukraine, how to get stuff across Ukraine. They're being really helpful. As I said before, there is this really nice initiative in Ivano-Frankivsk that actually helps to save cultural heritage, and they are collaborating with our partners in Europe to use their space as storage for these pieces, because, you know, our examples show that Russian forces destroy cultural heritage, and works in our space in Donetsk were destroyed or blown up in 2015. And we know that, for example, Maria Primachenko, who is well-known Ukrainian naive artist from 20th century, her museum was burned down during one of the attacks. But villagers from the city where this museum is, they managed to save artworks because they knew that they're important, and they took these artworks to their homes before the fight started. So, you know, it's amazing how people are united and how people understand the values they are fighting for. So fortunately, most of the works are fine. Museum no longer exists. And this kind of heritage, of course, has to be saved. And I'm really happy that there are initiatives that are trying to save museum collections.
Yeah, and I mean, also the story you told that your space has been occupied and the artworks have been destroyed in a way, in a very tragic and also in a very cynical way, but also show the power of the arts. Obviously, it has been seen as a danger. It has been seen as influential. And like I said, in a tragical and cynical way, it underlines the importance of the work that you have been doing and the power of arts. In this current situation, obviously, preserving the heritage, saving arts works is a high priority. In the everyday life, if that is a word that can be used, is there a role for artistic practice at all right now? Do people, like, I don't know, sing together or connect through music or connect through other practices? Or is the focus really purely, which would be fully understandable, in just like the humanitarian, very specific, concrete, staying alive, helping others to stay alive? Or is there any kind of like consolation in arts practices at this point?
And of course, you know, I'm speaking from perspective of cultural manager, let's say. Yeah, I'm not an artist, but I was running cultural programs. But artists who are, and now especially people who are staying in basements for 2 weeks already, they're producing amazing works that are reflections to what they see and how they feel. I see a lot of works being done in different media, in different genres. There is, you know, there are painting, there is music, people are making videos. There is a lot of content, if I can say so, cynically, is being produced. And, you know, again, there are a lot of works that are being used for good cause. For example, Alexey Shmorak is a known Ukrainian composer, contemporary musician. They organized a series of streams that they have been playing every evening with his friends, musicians, with from Kiev, you know, from the besieged city, to organize fundraising efforts to support some humanitarian needs. There is an initiative that we are trying to organize next week in the United States, you know, where artists will represent their artworks and reflections to the war, again with the idea of spreading the word about situation in Ukraine and also raising some funds for those in need. So even is this media that I, you know, before the war I despised and I thought that it's a joke, you know, NFT, this contemporary digital things, they became extremely useful now because, you know, like blockchain and all this digital currency that I, you know, hated and I thought that it's not something real, but they're actually contributing a lot of money and a lot of attention and interest to what's going on in Ukraine. And also it's great to see that there is this number of foreign artists who are also joining this efforts to help the country, which is amazing. For example, our friends in Prague, Dogs, if you know this, one of the best or, you know, one of the biggest independent cultural space in Prague, they organized a big auction to sell Czech art. Again, with idea of donating money to those who need it in Ukraine or who help people in Ukraine. It's incredible how many support is coming from art world.
Thank you very much. I find it's very hard in a way to ask a closing question, trying to wrap up a situation which is an unspeakable situation in a way. So my last question actually is no question, but more an invitation. What else would you like people to know or hear? Is there some, like a word you want to get out or also a person or an institution you would like to highlight so that people who want to follow up on our conversation and learn more can continue? Anything that you still would like to have heard and would like to say?
Well, there is a lot of communication going on from Ukraine, and this is something I'm quite proud of, you know, that there are a lot of professionals that are doing a lot of great communications and talking about what's going on in the country and spreading the word. And I think it's important to keep track of it. I know that, you know, it's unfortunately it's not the first and not the last war on our planet. You know, just little bit couple of months ago, you know, we were all into Afghanistan, and before that we were all in Belarus situation, and, you know, unfortunately this changes. Syria, you know, it's really crazy, but every day situation changes. I just wanted to ask listeners not to forget about us and keep track of what's going on. You can follow Izolyatsiya on social media. We are trying to spread a little bit of word also about different cultural initiatives that are happening around the country and around the world to support us. And I think it's really important to see united Europe, and that, you know, together we are strong and together we can overcome any situation, even horrible as situation now.
Thank you very much. And I can only like underline what you said, and hope that people follow up on the show note links, make donations, everybody who can try to support the humanitarian help that's going on. And if you can find the time and want to report a bit more in a few weeks' time, also to like keep the conversation going and keep the awareness and the spotlight on the situation, then I'd be really happy to talk to you again. For the time being, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and take care. All the best wishes. I hope you stay safe where you are right now with your kid and family. And it's really, really impressive work. And my biggest wish at this point is that there will be a moment in the future when we can talk about your work as a cultural manager, full stop, and learn about the work, because I think there's so much to learn there. There's so much inspiration also in that part of your work prior to the current situation. When you described Izolyatsiya, when you were running it with your collaborators and team, it sounded like a place I would love to take my students to just learn inspirational ways of using a cultural platform where I really think you're ahead of a lot of the things that are happening here at this point. And so that's my biggest wish for the hopefully midterm future, that we will meet with students at some point and see that kind of work. But for the time now, obviously the most important thing is just that you stay safe. And I'm hoping that we can continue the conversation.
Thank you so much.
This was the 88th edition of our podcast, Wie geht's, the cultural sphere in times of crisis. Our next episode will be published next week. I invite everybody to take a look at the website and the show notes of this edition and consider helping and maybe making a donation for humanitarian aid in Ukraine. I look forward to the upcoming conversations. Take care. Passen Sie gut. Auf sich auf.